there. Bet you didn't expect to see me up here, huh? Thank you. So everyday people, how does it think of, how do you feel when you think about everyday people? Does that mean just a few everyday people, or does that mean everybody? I think, yeah, everybody. That's what I think too. So today, first I want to thank Danielle and Michael and Jeannie and the band for helping us get the day started. Yeah, thank you. And unfortunately, we had that little glitch with the video, but at least we could feel their energy and their presence. And so I really want to take a moment and send everyone at the Pride Parade right now, everyone, not just our community, but the whole community that's there today, send them some love and energy. Let's just take a deep breath together. And just send that love out to anyone who is celebrating Pride today. That feels good. Bring them into this space as well. So some of you know me as the Barefooted Singer. Some of you know me as Bill and Sherry Farmer's daughter. Some of you know me as Michael's wife or Bodie's mom. Some of you don't know me at all. And a lot of you know that I grew up in Unity Church. I grew up in Unity in Atlanta since I was 6 years old. And so for me, this is home. This is a home for me, and it's always been a home for me. No matter where I moved, I could always find a spiritual center that I could be a part of. And so whether you've talked to me 100 times or never talked to me at all, there's a possibility that when I walked out on stage, you thought, who's that? Or, ugh, look at her hair. Or, wow, she's barefoot again? This is my way to connect with spirit. This is the way that when I remember my feet, I remember that spirit moves through me. And this isn't just Tara up here talking. This is spirit through me talking. And so when you think about somebody else based on how they look, a lot of times it's because of our first impressions. When we think about first impressions, we look at somebody and we automatically judge them based on our past or on our personal bias, how they're dressed, how they talk, how they look. And what I'd like to try to do today is talk a little bit about how first impressions are not always the best way to judge people. I mean, we gotta listen to our guts, right? If our gut says, don't talk to that person, it's probably a good idea not to talk to that person. But if our head says, I don't like the way that person looks, probably a good chance for you to take a breath and tune into another perspective. So when I was a kid, my family used to call me the defender of the underdog. No joke, like that was something, if you picked on somebody that I cared about, my brother or my friend, I would threaten you. I'd get in your face and I'd say, don't you dare talk about my friend that way or my brother that way. And I thought it was my thing to do. I thought it was mine to do. And so, and I would even defend people if I saw someone picking on someone else, like bullying someone, I'd walk out and I'd get in front of the bully. And I'd say, if you're gonna bully somebody, bully me. And I thought that that was mine to do because I thought they needed my help, but I didn't really ask them if they needed my help. I even got the nickname Kicker. Yes, Kicker. Because a friend of mine was getting picked on by her boyfriend in school, and I walked right up and I kicked him in the shins, and he was a good foot taller than me. And even teachers started calling me Kicker after that because I got a little bit of a reputation. I was proud of these titles, and I thought that it was mine to do, but because I thought I was helping people. I thought I was helping them. But they didn't always ask me, and so whether they asked me or not, I thought it was mine to do. And through several years of study and practice, after I started taking social justice classes and going to DEI groups and book clubs, I learned about marginalized people and what that means, like what we consider marginalized people. And I have also learned about white privilege. And I learned about white saviorism. I realized that I was trying to be a savior or a hero. And a part of me liked to think that people needed my help. And I definitely have done a lot of work around codependency to learn that that's not always the case. It's probably better to pause and listen and wait. And so people who I thought had a difficult life, or I personally had this idea that they seemed like they had less than me, or they had lives that weren't like mine, or they didn't look like me, all of that was completely based on my first impression of them. So seeing them through eyes of judgment and bias, and I thinking that they needed my rescuing, I thought that it was mine to do, but now I know better, and so I try to do better. So now I consider myself a bridge builder and an ally and an advocate and an accomplice and even sometimes an activist. For me, standing up here and talking while the people, our friends and family, are at the Pride Parade, this is a form of activism. And it's a form of accompliceness, I guess, being an accomplice, being a part of something bigger than me. And I still love to cheer people on, but instead of calling myself the cheerleader of the underdog, I consider myself more a cheerleader for oneness. And when Richard asked me in July if I would do the talk this Sunday, at first I was like, yes, because I love to be in front of an audience. It's something I've done since I was very little. When I was 6 years old at Unity, I literally got on stage for the first time at six and started singing, and so I've done it all my life. But I didn't really know what my focus was going to be other than oneness. That made sense to me, but I didn't know how I was going to change that, make it a little bit different. And I needed a core focus, and about 5 weeks ago, I woke up in the middle of the night hearing a phrase repeated over and over and over again in my head. The lowest of these, the lowest of these. And when I say I woke up in the middle of the night, I literally sat up hearing the lowest of these, the lowest of these. I'm like, what does that mean? And of course, because I grew up in Unity, I didn't really study the Bible, but I did grow up in the Bible Belt in the 70s, so I heard a few phrases, and I remembered hearing something about the least of these. So I looked up this phrase, where it came from, what it means. And as I was thinking about the lowest of these, the least of these, if we can bring up the first slide. So I'm going to have you read this to me. This is Matthew 25:40. Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. So take that in for a second, because when I first read that, I was like, hang on. I think I understand, but I'm not sure. What does the least of these actually mean? If I'm thinking about the least of these, then aren't I thinking of someone less than me? But really, what I started realizing is that there's something more to this phrase. If you're treating a certain person this way, then aren't you kind of energetically treating everyone that way? Because we're all connected. And so when I reached out to Richard, I actually asked him, tell me what you think about this phrase, this quote. And he basically said that it's all about oneness and interconnectedness, and that our connection goes beyond space and time or race, religion, politics, gender, or personal bias. And Unity teaches us that there's only one God, and that we are a part of that oneness, and that if there's only one of us, then how we treat anyone is how we treat everyone. And it's also how we teach people to treat us. And so when I was thinking about this phrase, when I'm thinking about anyone who's less than me, aren't I judging them based on my first impression of them and my own personal bias? So after thinking about this, I had an epiphany, but before I tell you that epiphany, I'm gonna ask you to do something with me. For just a moment, let's close our eyes and take a deep breath into your heart. Now think about something or someone you might have given the least amount of attention to in your home. Something in your home or your family. Think about the things you give the least amount of attention to. It might be a person who thinks differently from you, or something in our environment, or like me, something that you hate to clean. Okay, now open your eyes. Back to my epiphany. In my house, think about those things that you thought of, okay, for just a moment. Really kind of hold those in your heart, because those are the people that we're considering least of these It might be something really simple. Like for me, it's my toilets and my bearded dragon, Lizzie. And so if I can avoid cleaning the toilet or the dishes, you better believe I'm gonna avoid it, because it's something that I don't wanna do. It's the thing that I think of the least amount, even though I know it needs to happen. And my bearded dragon, Lizzie, she has this very giant, very large cage, and she's got great spaces to be able to eat, and she's got great spaces to be able to, you know, do the other stuff, the things that we do in our bathrooms. And she's got this separate space, and so to me, it's like, oh, the less amount I have to clean up this cage, because it's very large. It takes about 2 hours to clean this whole cage. And when I think about her, and I think about my bathroom, or I think about my dishes, and I'm ignoring them, then aren't I on some level ignoring what's going on inside of me when it comes to cleanliness and about health and wellness? Because if the least of these in my home is the bathrooms and my lizard's cage, then somehow I'm treating myself that way. Or I'm teaching other people that it's okay to treat me that way on some level. So while you let that part settle in, I'm going to share another way to look at this idea, and it's easily captured by the golden rule. Yeah, there it is. So as you can see, there's multiple different ways. There's a lot of different religions and spiritual truths that practice the same version of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I'm just going to read a couple of them. In Judaism, that which is hateful to you, do not do to another. In Buddhism, do not hurt others in way you yourself would find hurtful. In Hinduism, one should never do that to another which one regards as injurious to one's own self. So as you can see, we're all basically saying the same thing. And when we think about these concepts, and then we tie them in with the least of these, for me now, the concept of the golden rule isn't just do unto others as I would have them do unto me. It's do unto anything or anyone that I pay the least amount of attention to as I would allow others to do unto me. It's a little convoluted, but does that make sense? If I'm treating my bathroom and my lizard as less than, then I'm telling the universe it's okay to treat me this way. I don't like that anymore, so I'm doing a lot more to change that concept. And so now we come to the story of the Good Samaritan. Who knows the story of the Good Samaritan? Yeah, a lot of us do. Some of us don't. It's a story about a man who was beaten and left for dead. He was robbed, and he was a wealthy man to begin with, but somebody beat him, robbed him, and left him for dead on the side of the road. So this man, who had what he needed to live in life and be happy, was now left for dead. And many, many people passed by him on the side of the road because they considered him the least of these. And then one day a man from Samaria walked by, also known as a Samaritan, and he helped this man. He fed him, he clothed him, he cleaned him up, he gave him money, and he even took him to an inn and paid for his night's stay at the inn. So anyone who has the compassion to, anyone who has the compassion to lend a stranger a hand is someone who is simply willing to be kind. Just be kind, be generous, be kind to another person. So he didn't see this man as less than him. He didn't see him as the least of these. And so now we have a story called the Good Samaritan that most of us know without even going to church. You know, if we go to church, we might hear that story. But some of us, like me, I didn't grow up with stories like that, but somehow I still heard that story. Are you being a Good Samaritan? And it just so happens that a friend of mine and I were talking recently, and I was telling her just a little bit about my talk. And she is someone who doesn't brag on herself very often. And for some reason, she was like, I feel like I should tell you this. And so she told me this story about when she was leaving her parents' house. And as she was driving away from her parents' house, she happened to look over, and on the sidewalk was a man in a wheelchair. And he seemed stuck. And she was, it was getting dark, and she, when she looked over at him, she kept driving, and she was like, maybe he's not stuck, and she just kept going. So we do this. We talk ourselves out of helping another person, even though we're not sure if they need help or not. And so she kept driving, and the whole time she was thinking, something's nagging at me. I feel like I need to go back and help this person. And because it was getting dark, and because she was a woman driving alone, she was thinking, what if it's a trick? You know, what if he's on the side of the road in this wheelchair, but he's not actually injured or hurt? And maybe he's got friends around the corner that could come and grab me if I come to help. But something kept nagging at her, so she kept driving. And then eventually she was thinking, okay, source, if I'm supposed to do this, please have my back, you know? Make sure that I'm being taken care of. Make sure that I'm safe. And she even said, if this is not mine to do, give me a sign. But she didn't get a sign to not turn around, so she turned around, and she went back. And this man was still stuck on the sidewalk, and she realized that he had groceries hanging off the back of his wheelchair. And so she decided to roll her window down and say, hey, do you need some help? And he was very, very embarrassed, very uncomfortable, and he said, yeah, I'm stuck. And so she got out of her car, and she walked over to his wheelchair, and she couldn't quite figure out, because it was just dark enough, she couldn't quite figure out what was going on, so she kept trying to move it, and then she realized his leg was in the way, and she said, do you mind if I move your leg? And he said, yeah, I'm paralyzed from the waist down, and I'm okay with you moving my leg. So she moved his leg over, and she was like, oh, the wheel is off the side of the sidewalk. It was just enough of a curb that he couldn't get past it. So she lifted that wheelchair up and she pushed him over to the side. And without another thing, he clicked that thing into gear and he started going off. But as he did, he said, that's what I'm talking about. That's it. That's it. He just wheeled off. That's what I'm talking about. And to me, to me and this friend, all like now we're just like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's a good Samaritan moment because he realized it and she realized it. Neither one of them, I'm not even going to tell you if they were different races or nationalities because that actually shouldn't matter. But I can tell you this. They didn't know if either one of them was gay. They didn't know if either one of them could speak the same language. They didn't realize or know if either that one of them was going to be biased towards the other one. But they were both vulnerable enough to work together and to choose trust over fear. So let's just take a deep breath and think about that. Is that something that you think you would do? Would you have turned around and gone back? I'd like to think that I would, because I generally am the kind of person that wants to help people. But also, she had kids at home. I have a kid at home. You know, the first thought is, what if something happens to me? But that gut knowing, that inner knowing, she asked him if he needed help, and he said yes. She asked him if she could move his leg, and he said yes. He accepted her help. She was able to help, and that was it. Simple. In society, marginalized people are considered to be way too many people as the least of these. And a lot of times we call marginalized people certain groups. And a lot of people consider marginalized people being the LGBTQ community, women, black or brown people, physically, mentally, or differently abled, poor people or poverty-stricken people, or even people who are not considered beautiful by society standards. So that takes on a lot of the world, right? But to be honest, someone doesn't have to be part of what we might consider marginalized to be considered as, quote, less than, or the least of these, or someone that I'm gonna give attention to. If I have a bias of any kind, I might consider my bias towards another person as less than me. But remember that how we treat anyone is how we treat everyone. And it's how we teach people to treat us. And society places certain people at the top and other people below them. Bias, racism, judgment, homophobia, misogyny, fear, worry, mistrust, and even your own discomfort marginalizes someone else. And we often forget that those people or those things that we judge are someone's kid, or someone's parent, or someone's best friend, or it's the ocean, or it's Mother Earth, or it's Palestine, or it's Haiti, or it's someone whose politics or religion are different from your own. And we also weirdly forget that we're living on the same planet Earth, and that it's up to us to take care of our Mother Earth and each other. So let's go back to Lizzie and my toilets. Not that anyone wants to do that, but so the day after I woke up and I heard the phrase about the lowest of these, and I realized what it started to mean to me, that it's how I treat things in my home and my world, I had this, and then I finally realized that my lizard's cage deserves to be clean. My lizard deserves to have a clean home. I deserve to have a clean home. So not only did I clean the lizard's cage and the toilets and the bathrooms, and then I started cleaning a bunch of other things that I found around the house, it was the best I've ever cleaned them, and I actually had fun doing it. I enjoyed it because I realized that how I'm treating them is how I'm treating me and how I'm treating the rest of the world. And gosh, don't I want to be a good person? Of course I do. And so then I started noticing the non-started projects, the half-started projects and the piles and things that needed to be organized and recycled throughout my house. And I got my husband and my son, and we started cleaning some things up that we hadn't cleaned up in a while. We organized some things differently. And I also realized at that same time that it was time for me to let go of my website and my business, which I had poured hundreds, not joking, ask my family, hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars into this website and into this business that I was attached to. I thought it was important, but because I started recognizing about the least of these, I started realizing that this website and this business were getting more attention than my bathroom and my lizard. And I was getting nothing out of those things, but I was getting a lot of joy out of my lizard and clean toilets. And so I chose to let go of my expectations and my attachments and my egoic desires because I realized that I'd been treating myself as the least of these when I was holding on to and attached to this idea that a business had to look a certain way. Guess what happened? This is my favorite part. Because something really unexpected happened. Not only was I loving how I felt from cleaning all of those things, this is where I might get a little teary, because this was miraculous. I got offered a job to work here with the teens. And of course I said yes, because I love working with teens. I'm very good at it. I've got a lot of background working with kids. And so I took a position working here part-time to be the teen lead sponsor. Thank you. I also was asked to spearhead the Trunk or Treat this year, the event. That's huge, much bigger than I realized when I said yes. But I said yes, because again, they were happening at different times, but they were right after I let go of the things that I was attached to. And then I was asked by Lorelai to be a part of the core team for the women's circle. And I said yes to that. But then more miracles started happening. Suddenly I started letting go of pain and inflammation and weight that my body had been carrying for so long, and I'm a health and wellness person. So I'm a health and wellness coach. I don't know why I was holding on to this weight, but as soon as I let go of these attachments and recognized this aspect of the least of me, my body started feeling better, literally, physically better. Now, had I known that all of these things that I said yes to were going to be happening in the same month of October, including this talk, I might have said no to some of them. But what I realized is that everything happens in divine timing, and Spirit had a better idea than I did. Because when I said yes to all of those things, and the women's circle was yesterday, and the talk is today, and trunk or treat's coming up, and I've been doing the teen stuff, and all of these things, that I've been pushed to my growing edge. And that growing edge is a really beautiful place to be. Because then you start recognizing, like, this life doesn't work for me anymore, but this life is very exciting. And then something has truly shifted in me because I started letting go of habits and beliefs and attachments. And I started seeing everything and everyone through clearer eyes of love and connection and oneness. So from now on, if you see someone who doesn't look like you, or if you talk to someone who doesn't believe the same way that you do, try to remember that they're still a person just like you, and how you treat them is how you're willing to let everyone else treat you. Nobody's less than in the oneness of God and Goddess. Everyone is equal. And I'm going to ask you to make a little pact with me. Because Richard always says things like, don't just do this in here, take it out there, right? He says, take it out to the streets. Take it out to the people that we don't know, people that aren't a part of our community. And the pact is to at least start practicing seeing everything and everyone as a reflection of Source, of God, of Goddess, of peace, of love, of oneness, and of yourself. Go out there and be a good Samaritan in the world. Or to paraphrase Mr. Rogers, when he said, look for the helpers, be a helper and be a bridge. Thank you.